So recently, I attended a celebration of life for my family doc. He was a man really the same age as me, 1 year younger than me. And the service was outdoors in my former doc's backyard. And it was crowded. The city of Yarrow had to set up parking lots all over the place. This man was an incredibly popular doctor here in Abbotsford and was well loved. And so that we were celebrating in his backyard, and one of his doc colleagues got up to share anecdotes. Many people got up to share anecdotes of his life. And apparently Doc Burns had collected all kinds of sayings and put them out on social media and different ways. And one of them, and this is what he was sharing, and I'm paraphrasing this morning, if we all threw our problems on a pile with the understanding that we needed to pick up a set of problems as well, almost all of us would, upon consideration, pick up our own problems again. Now, this tidbit of wisdom makes sense, I think, coming from a doctor who probably saw over the course of his ministry, his work of a lifetime, 10,000 different sets of problems. And many of those coming into his office would complain to him about their problems being worse than other people's problems. And I think that's true, isn't it? There's another obvious insight that such a gem reveals. Everyone has something. Some illness. Some deep shame, maybe. Some huge disappointment in their life. Some family dysfunction that is quite serious. And unlike doctors or psychologists or sometimes priests, we may not know this as we watch a seemingly endless stream of healthy people walk by or be part of our lives in some way as we go through the course of our days. Now, of course, not all afflictions are the same. Some are physical, some are emotional, some are economic, or even existential. I've known people to be in deep pain experiencing existential angst around the meaning of their lives. I have a friend whose WhatsApp moniker is, "What's life about anyway?" And half the time he's serious about that. Which is why I think almost all of us have questions from the time we're knee-high to a grasshopper. Questions about the role of evil and suffering, of aging, and of course of death. Questions that have some answers, some more satisfying than others. And sometimes we get sidetracked with trying to figure this stuff out intellectually, but living with these realities, with suffering, with evil around us, is really an immense emotional challenge, more so than it is an intellectual one. Perhaps the greatest emotional challenge that human beings face. Particularly when we sense the fundamental inequality in this regard across societies and even amongst people we know. Why do some people, why do some cultures and societies seem to receive more healing, more help than others? Well, other people in our lives continue to live in despair. Does that mean some are worthier? That some societies and cultures have somehow got on God's good side? Is God capricious? Like, who knows why, right? Or perhaps, God has always been serious about this great grand project. Call it the evolutionary project, the development project, whatever you want to call it, that human beings are meant to develop and evolve to become those very beings in the universe through whom healing flows, and so become in that an extension of God. Perhaps our strange gospel text can shed some light. We see here invalids crowding around the pool by the Sheep Gate in Jerusalem. I've been to where that supposedly was. Who knows if that's the actual spot? The mechanism by which healing is happening in that spot happens when the water is stirred up. Now, that's unique even in biblical terms, and it sounds bizarre to the modern scientific mind. However we think of it, the cause, this water being stirred up, is the cause of much elbowing, pushing, rushing. Because apparently, bizarrely, this phenomenon, however we understand it, is only able to heal one person at a time. Not the person who has prayed the most earnestly, or who is the worthiest person or candidate for healing, but simply the first one to get in. Maybe you've had this experience. You're sitting in the waiting room at the ER, and someone who gets there after you gets admitted into the ER before you do. Now, in that case, sure, it's irritating. We might glump in our inner soul, but we comfort ourselves by imagining that the process isn't merely random, that someone must have come in who has a more serious condition than ourselves and therefore was admitted before us. We hear a lot, though, about how in God's goodness, there's more than enough to go around. When we're talking about physical resources or opportunities to share our gifts and talents, we hear a lot about that in the church. And I think that's true fundamentally. There's far more potential and healing and gifts in this very small group here this morning than we can probably imagine. But we're also going to be glossing over stories like our gospel text today if we think that reality is really just 5,000 people getting fed by a couple of loaves and fishes, and we're just kind of waiting to see that happen. Or that should be what's happening all the time. I mean, that's my favorite kind of miracle. It's in stories like that, it seems everyone gets something. Everyone is treated equally and fairly. And it feels good that there's baskets and baskets left over, doesn't it? And so in stories like that, I think we're getting the big picture, what God's will ultimately is, what's possible, if you will. There really is enough to go round, whether we're talking about healthcare or jobs or food. But in stories like our gospel today, we begin to understand that for that to happen, we need to focus on each need. Nothing happens automatically. And so Jesus focuses all his attention on one man. It says all kinds of invalids and paralyzed people and people who are in need lying there. But Jesus focuses on this one man, a man who's been there very, very long time, 38 years, which in the ancient world was actually a complete lifetime. So it's a wonder he's still alive. And maybe that's why Jesus pays attention to him. The story seems to insinuate that, at least, but doesn't say it directly. I think that it's interesting overall that the New Testament denies what we crave, the justification why certain people are healed and others seem to be ignored. We really want it to be because people deserved to get healed. And the ones that Jesus ignored didn't deserve it. But alas, there's no kind of karmic satisfaction in the New Testament. But what is really the issue for this man in this story? It's a unique story because, unlike other healing stories, there is a known resource for his healing. Though Jesus heals him, tells him to stand up, pick up his mat, and walk, he could have been healed outside of Jesus' direct ministry. And that's unique in the New Testament. For however we imagine the waters being stirred, it is a recognizable healthcare system, if you will. And so what the man really needs is a friend who will advocate for him, who will take him into the water, give him his due. And what that says, of course, to us in our community and society is that however we understand the state of our world and the role of evil and suffering in it, God has not left us without resources. What is required, actually, is help in accessing those resources. At different times in my life, I've had the privilege of advocating, and many of you have done this, for different people who simply find the healthcare system unmanageable. I've driven people to appointments, written letters, and I like to think that that has made a difference. But I'm kind of leery that that works. Like, it shouldn't work, because I'm not a health expert. Shouldn't the system simply work better than that? Of course it should. But I think it's also naive. As human beings, we can't get away from human influence. We can't get away ever from friends advocating for friends, neighbors advocating for neighbors. And so, in our day, the lack of access to the stirred water has hit us in the face, hasn't it? In the last few months, we've heard many reports that most people can't access a family doctor who gets to know us over time, who understands our foibles, our uniqueness. And in that respect, we've been learning that over a million, or close to a million, British Columbians have no ready access to health care beyond the services of clinics. And it's really tough to get the specialist resources you need when that's your situation. And I'm sure it's true to say that people die because they're not in that kind of more personal medical system. We've had this amazing opportunity during the pandemic to reevaluate what's important to us in our society. And we've come to a greater awareness that society really is only as strong as its weakest link. So less resources into the flashy, more into what's really most beneficial for the majority of people is something that would seem to be a no-brainer and something that this story points to obliquely. But we're not there. And so we have an opportunity. I want to also draw your attention to that last line. The healing takes place on the Sabbath. That's the day that points to non-competitive rest, to wholeness, to things coming into balance, a day when even cattle and slaves caught a break. It's written into Israel's constitution. But unfortunately, as the years and centuries wore on, the Sabbath was misused, and it didn't provide that break. And so Jesus is disrupting that which gives advantage to the few, to the powerful, and to those who have capacities that most don't have. And instead, Jesus aligns himself with God in that moment. The Holy One, who designated as the very first thing to be called holy in all of creation, not our work, important as it is, but the Sabbath. So the question to you today is, do you take true Sabbath? Do you truly combine worship with rest? It's always God's invitation towards balance and equality, both for you and for society. And I'm very aware that many people simply can't afford to take the Sabbath. as they can't afford or don't have a way of accessing health care, they don't have a way of truly resting. But if you do, I encourage you to experiment with it, and you will find yourself in God's healing pool. So the power of this story is that it's not an abstract story. It really is a story of healing coming to a person in the unique way that he needed it to come to him. Healing comes to each of us in unique ways. As the church, we get to model that. We get to pay attention to people and advocate for each other and pray as we do that merciless systems are confronted and called out for that very thing. So, if after throwing your problems on a common pile with the rest of us, you decide to pick up your own again, pick this up also. God doesn't heal everyone simply by declaring them well. Most people find healing in partnership with others. And that happens when we value what God values. That's part of what we mean when we say the risen Christ is among us. Amen.